Okay, well, here we go. Turn with me, if you will, to this week's Torah portion, which begins in chapter 25 of the book of Shemot, Exodus. And this one, too, is kind of interesting, if for no other reason, and there are other reasons, but then it essentially is another digression. As I saw pointed out somewhere in one of the midrash, you got seven chapters now of detail on the Mishkan, the Ohel, the tent of meeting, before we get around to talking about the rest of the story, the part of the story that we know is coming. And I guess I will say this up front, maybe I'll talk about this some more tomorrow, but it struck me as kind of an interesting place, to the extent that, hey, maybe this is a metaphor for our times too. We're kind of in between. We know there's something really, really nasty coming. We know that when we read this story. And yet, why all of a sudden this digression about building something that, as it turns out, ain't going to get built for a while either? So it is kind of funny. There's been lots and lots of discussion on this over the years. And so far as the in-between part is concerned, I couldn't help but have this strong impression as I was preparing my notes this week that maybe that's where we are. We're in between. And perhaps what we need to be doing is focusing on building a place for him to dwell within us. And, oh, yes, I know the standard is, well, he dwells within us. But on the other hand, if we don't allow his Torah to be within us and we say it's all done away with anyway, is that really true? I know that there are a lot of us that are coming out and trying to move in that direction, but still seems to me like there's nothing wrong with focusing on some elements of the Mishkan and beginning to see some of the connections there while we're waiting for whatever we're waiting for to happen anyway. But back to this one. This one starts chapter 25 again, and it says, "And Yahuwah spoke, ve yedebar Yahuwah al Moshe." And what did he say? What did he amar to Moshe? He said, "Speak unto the children of Israel and tell them that they should take for me terumah, an offering." And in particular, this is a free will offering. "Every man whose heart makes him willing, from him shall you take my offering." So we have the regular words that start so many chapters, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and he said, okay, well, that's pretty common. So we don't use that for the name of the Torah portion. But when we get to the first unique word, which in, of course, this one is terumah, this free will offering, something that is lifted up or heaved to, a heave offering, similar kind of wording. That, therefore, is what the portion is called, and that's how it begins. Here's what you're going to get. You're going to take from them the following things: gold and silver and brass, also blue, purple, and scarlet, fine linen, goat's hair. So first things we've got are a couple, three metals, then a whole bunch of materials that basically can be used to make things, including the covering for the tent and some of the things within it. Same thing, I guess, goes for the metals, too. Ram skins, dyed red, seal skins, and acacia wood. And I have forgotten now which one of these is which, but at least one of those two words in the Hebrew is generally considered to be one of the words that, you know what, we really don't know what this animal is. And as I'm looking at it, I'm not sure. You know, it's kind of like beaver skins. We probably don't have the animal, and we're not sure. But in any case, we're not done with the list yet either. Oil for light, spices to make the anointing oil and the sweet incense, and some stones, onyx stones to be set in the ephod and the breastplate. And then we get to this line. Now, this one is interesting. "And let them make for me, a sanctuary, a mikdash," is literally the Hebrew word there, "that I may dwell among them." And here's a place where I find this term, "let them make for me, li, something," kind of interesting. Rashi's comment is what kind of draws me to it. He says, you know what, really? He's physically not going to be contained within this thing. And so he concludes that probably a better translation of this is, "let them make for my name's sake." A place where, in fact, his glory will be seen, and he will, in fact, come and meet with people. But there's a whole lot more here going on than meets the eye. And that's the theme we'll keep coming back through as we go through the rest of this portion. All right, according to all that I will show you, the pattern for the tabernacle, for the Mishkan, pattern for all the furniture, all these things. Here's how you're going to make it. And it says here, kind of think of this as a blueprint, in other words. And they're also going to make an ark for me. Lee? No. Just make an ark out of acacia wood. It's going to be 2.5 cubits long, cubit and a half wide, and also a cubit and a half high. Now, a cubit, of course, around 18 inches. So this sucker is, well, this thing, pardon me. This ark is approximately, let's say, about 4 feet by not quite 3 feet. By 3 feet. It's going to be overlaid with pure gold inside and outside. There'll be a crown of gold around it, and there'll be 4 rings that are made of gold that will be used to bear it. 2 rings for one side, 2 rings on the other side. Are you picturing this? Basically, we got a big box. We're going to talk about what goes on top of it, but on the sides of it first, there are rings. Staves. Stakes, carrying poles out of acacia wood, they'll too also be overlaid with gold. And you put those things into the rings on either side of the ark, and that's how it is going to be carried, borne. And this is interesting. The staves are to be in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it. Lo, basically, don't remove them. And Rashi had a single comment on this one too, ever. In other words, these poles, these carrying poles, are never to be removed. And that alone, I guess, ought to inspire some questions. Don't know we have answers, but we certainly have questions, and we also see some indications that when it's not carried properly, as we see in the time of David, people try to put it on a cart and carry it. Not so good. Inside this ark, you're going to put the testimony, which, in fact, I will give you. We're going to later see those are the tablets. And make an ark cover, too. So not only the box, but a cover for it of pure gold. And, of course, it's going to be 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide, so it's going to be the same size as the top. And on top of that, we're going to have 2 cherubim. Cherubim is how people usually say that in English. Cherub, right, singular. Cherubim, cherubim, plural. So 2 of them. They're going to be made out of beaten work from gold, 2 ends of the ark cover. Put one on one side, the other on the other side, and out of one piece, you make these cherubim and the 2 ends thereof. They spread their wings high, and they screen this cover of the ark with their wings. They face one another. The sages say, oh, by the way, and that's also how it's going to be carried as well. Put that ark cover on the ark, in the ark again, second time it's mentioned, put this testimony that I shall give you. And that's going to be talked about here as well. Let's see, got a question on the screen. Does this instruction apply just at that time or apply in the future? Now, I'm not sure exactly which instruction. I'm assuming she's talking about the whole instruction for building all of this. And yes, there is a popular understanding that the temple might be rebuilt, that it'll happen. Certainly the reason that comes is this idea from places like Matthew 24, where he talks about, and of course it's a reference from Daniel in turn, the daily offerings and where the abomination of desolation occurs. So I can't argue with that. I guess that would be the way I would read it too. It would be the Peshat understanding of what the text says. And yes, the rest of it is also true. An altar is the thing that seems to be the minimum necessary required for what's described in the prophecies. It's interesting, and I guess I should have mentioned that. I was fixing to in just a minute here anyway, that we are getting a lot of this instruction, it would seem, at least in this part, backwards, right? A lot of times people will talk about, oh, well, you're going to build a building, and then inside the building you put some stuff. In this case, it's not that way at all. In this case, what we're talking about is first the ark and what's going to go in the ark, and it's already been mentioned twice. Then later we're going to talk about some other furnishings, things like the table of showbread and the menorah and so forth. Eventually we get around to the building and the covering, or at least the tent, the mishkan and the covering. So there is something slightly different than our normal conception going on here. Question, and this is a good one, is there a difference between pure gold and gold? Sure. Okay, how pure is pure, right? You will hear people talk about, and here I'll wax nerdy just for a second to make the point, a 0.999 fine, 99.9% pure gold, 3 9s fine, and that's kind of standard. As far as what you find in bars and in coinage, although nowadays there's a few pieces of gold, some coins that are being refined to 4 9s or even 5 9s purity. We don't know exactly what it is that it means pure gold when Scripture says pure gold, but on the other hand, it's not that hard technologically to get gold to be pretty pure. The reason is, of course, that if you melt gold down, it's really heavy. Even metals that are very heavy themselves, like lead or silver, that might be in there with it, will float on top of gold. Anything else, any impurities, dross, as Scripture calls it, those will for sure float. So the way that it's done, pretty simply, is yes, you just melt the gold down, you heat it up, and anything that comes up to the top and looks cruddy, you get a great big ladle and you scoop it off. And pretty soon you keep doing that, and what's left is pretty pure gold. So honestly, without knowing, I'm not sure whether that's probably about 3 9s would be my guess. And that's probably about what it means. Just for reference, by the way, and this is the other part that's kind of interesting and the reason for lots of speculation. If you make something out of pure gold, it tends to be really soft. You ever seen the old movies where somebody takes a gold coin and bites it and sees if there's a tooth print in it? Well, it turns out if it's pure gold, very pure gold has a number of characteristics, right? It's ductile, it's malleable, you can draw it into wire, you can beat it to a thin leaf, and it's really soft. So pure gold is also very soft gold, and it has been pointed out, of course, that this ark carried with rings of pure gold would probably fall apart. In other words, the rings wouldn't bear the weight of the thing that they're asked to bear if it's in fact pure gold. So the skeptics say, well, that proves the Bible doesn't know what it's talking about. Well, those of us that aren't quite so cynical and do have an understanding that the Creator can specify things and make them work out would say, I can think of a whole lot of ways that that might not be true. For example, he could change the characteristics of pure gold when it's put into the ark, and that I have no trouble believing at all. There are even speculations that you'll see in the Midrash that when the ark is lifted, it's almost like there's a hand helping it along, if you know what I'm saying. So in other words, the priests, the Kohanim that are carrying it, would appear to be carrying it, but there's some help that they're getting up on top too. Bottom line is, we're not sure, but it is interesting to look at these things and ask the questions. Where did the stuff come from? How does the physics work out? I have talked about this more in years past, but it's always been kind of fascinating to me that if you look and see how this ark is built, and there's one thing that we're not 100% sure of, although I tend to suspect that the gold that is covered, that is literally this leaf that is covered all over the inside and the outside of the ark, is connected. So when you're done, what you have here is a Faraday cage, a really good Faraday cage with the lid on. The electromagnetic field, any fields outside, they're not going to permeate inside the ark. And that's kind of fascinating. You can imagine all kinds of interesting stuff that might arise. On the other hand, if there is, in fact, an insulating layer, the acacia wood in between, and there's no connection, now we got a capacitor instead, and a lot of other things could follow. So, bottom line is still, we don't know. But it is kind of fascinating to read through this and imagine some of the characteristics that this thing might have, as well as the fact that it would obviously be prohibitively expensive, even to try to build today. Another comment on the screen, and this is a good point that Kimberly makes. There are different grades of gold, 9 carat, 14 carat, 22 carat. I started to mention this, and I didn't quite follow through. 14 carat gold in a lot of parts of the world is almost considered pot metal anymore. So 24 carat gold is pure gold. And so 14 carat would basically be alloyed and not even remotely pure. For reference, the coinage that once upon a time when we were a free country with honest weights and measures, a gold coin, a double eagle, you know, that you'd read about in Mark Twain's books like Huck Finn, 1 ounce was 90% pure gold. They put just enough copper in it so that it, in fact, had the right weight, but it was a lot harder than the gold would have been and therefore wore better when it was circulated and handled by people than a pure gold coin would have been. Over time, what's kind of fascinating, if you look at the history of coinage, is you see that, gold coins frequently did get weighed. They got weighed in the Middle Ages and in Europe and in most of the Roman Empire, because as they got worn or maybe shaved deliberately even, people wouldn't give you as much for them, and they wanted to find out if what they're getting really weighed what it was supposed to. You'll still see in the United States and in other countries where gold coins like Krugerrands or Austrian Coronas or whatever circulate. They're usually alloyed, and a lot of times what they'll do is to make them a full 1 ounce is that the coin will actually weigh about 10% more, so that there's one full ounce of pure gold in there, even if it's alloyed. And other times you get an ounce, but it's not an ounce of pure gold, so the actual gold weighs less. Anyway, lots of interesting stuff having to do with gold. And, okay. I think I got the questions there. All right, back to the text. And when this thing is done, there it is that I will meet with you, and I'll speak with you from above the ark cover, from between the two cherubim, which are upon the ark of the testimony, and all these things which I will give you in commandment unto the children of Israel. So this is where the story begins of the things that are going to be made. First with the ark. Then we're going to make a table out of also acacia wood. This time it's 2 cubits or 2 times 18 inches. Just call it right at 3 feet and a cubit 18 inches wide. So 3 feet by 1.5 feet, cubit and a half high. And it too is going to be overlaid with pure gold with a crown round about and a border. The hand breadth, so call it 4.5 inches or so, roundabout. Make a golden crown, a border all the way around it. And likewise, put 4 rings of gold on the 4 corners so that it too has something to be carried by. Make sure these staves that you're going to carry that with are also made of acacia wood, overlaid with gold. And again, that's how it's going to be carried. And we're going to have some other things that sit upon it, dishes and pans and jars and bowls to pour out. They are also going to be made of pure gold. Set the showbread table before me always. We'll talk about where later. Now, you can also make a candlestick, a menorah, beaten work that this thing will be made, even the base, shafts, cups, its knops, its flowers, all of it is to be one piece. And it'll have 6 branches coming out of the sides. 3 on each side, 3 on the right side, 3 on the left side, 3 cups made like almond blossoms in 1 branch, knop and flower, and 3 in the other branch. Again, total of 6. And in the candlestick, 4 cups with almond blossoms and the knops and the flowers. And there's a description of how all this is going to be done. But the key here, I think that's kind of fascinating, and I've been told, and I can't confirm this, but I'm not an expert metal worker. This is all to be one piece. The whole thing beaten out of one piece of pure gold. Now, when you add the middle part, there'll be 7 lamps. The light of the lamps thereof to give light over against it. There's tongs and snuff dishes too. All of this stuff, pure gold. A talent. And a talent is a lot of gold. Depending upon I've heard different numbers over the years. Suffice it to say, pretty heavy, perhaps as much as, and this kind of tends to be the upper estimate, as much as perhaps 70 pounds. Now, 70 pounds of gold, I did the math years ago. In current prices, though, that's up in the millions of dollars. As I recall, let's see, probably $4 million or so. Think of about 14 ounces as $14,000. For pound times 70. I'm not doing the math right. But anyway, a whole lot of gold. And the other interesting thing, like we were just talking, if this is pure gold, it might even bend under its own weight. So an interesting question there too. Finally, what I started to say was, it has been said that, most metal workers would argue, no, I don't think this could even be done. I don't think we have anybody with enough skill to literally take and beat one of these things out of a single piece of pure gold and be able to get it to come out right. Massive. You'd almost say some divine level of skill involved in making this. Okay. Make them according to the pattern that you'll be shown up on the mountain. Now, we get on from these three first items, the ark, the table of showbread, and the menorah, to how we're going to make the tabernacle, the mishkan itself. 10 curtains, fine twined linen. Here's where we get the blue, the purple, and the scarlet. And with cherubim as well, kruvim, the work of the skilled workman, you'll make them. Each of these things is pretty long, 28 cubits. So, pretty close to 50 feet. Breadth of each is 4 cubits, 6 feet. All the curtains are going to be the same. 5 of them are going to be coupled together, one to the other, and 5 of the other. So 2 sets of 5. Make some loops in them. Total of 50 in each set of curtains on the two opposite sets. 50 clasps of gold to go with those. And they're going to be coupled one to another with the clasp so that basically this tabernacle can be a unified whole. There are going to be some curtains made as well out of goat's hair. That'll be a tent over the tabernacle. And 11 curtains, you make all of those. So we've got a pretty... what would you call it? It's an interesting way to build this thing with a number of curtains that will essentially be the covering for it. Each of these are going to be 30 cubits, breadth 4 cubits. They'll too also have one measure. And again, we're talking a set of 5 and a set of 6. They'll double over the 6th curtain in the forefront of the tent. Each one also with 50 loops, 50 clasps. This time the clasps are going to be of brass. And this will be the things that will be used to couple the tent together. And a lot more discussion. Now, I'm going to pause here and say, okay, I won't go through the details for one reason. And that is that over the years, and I've got some drawings, and I had a fellow send me this last year. I have to pull those out, maybe talk about them a little bit more. Most of us assume that the tabernacle is going to be rectangular. But you know what? It doesn't actually give the dimensions. We have the dimensions for the curtains that go over it. But I've seen some informed and interesting speculation that, you know what, maybe this thing is a dome-shaped, or maybe it's round. It's an assumption that it is exactly the way it is, that you've seen pictured in the various Bibles and books. And what can I say other than we can't prove it? And it is interesting to speculate about. I certainly just wish I could have seen it. That's about as much as I can add to it. There are going to be some ram skins dyed red. That's going to be a covering over it. There are going to be boards for the tabernacle. Those two are made out of acacia wood, 10 cubits long and a cubit and a half wide for each. They're going to basically be set around 20 boards for the south side, 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets for each board under the 2 tenons. And what we see here, too, is, I've heard it explained this way, kind of cutting to the chase. If you look at the construction of this thing, essentially what you see is from the outside in, we're going to move up the scale of metals from bronze and brass, basically up to silver. And the closer we get to the Holy of Holies, the more we get to the metal of gold. And even things like the acacia wood boards and so forth, they're socketed with silver. More discussion. Tabernacle west side, 6 boards. So I think this is where people come up with this understanding that, maybe it's rectangular. I can't argue with that. I'm not claiming that it's not. I would just suggest that even if it wasn't quite rectangular, or even if it had a slightly different shape, you'd still talk about the sides being north, south, east, and west. Sockets of silver. We got basically a description of the boards all the way around, all of them made of acacia wood, 5 for the boards of one side, 5 for the boards of the other side, the tabernacle. Middle part of the boards pass through from end to end. And once we get close then to the middle, these are going to be overlaid with gold, make their rings of gold for holders of the bars, and rear up the tabernacle according to the way that he says, have been shown. It seems to be past tense, but at this point, Moshe, remember, has gone up to the mount. He went up into the cloud. Takes us back to the question of when did the people of Israel find out about this? All of the things we're describing here, remember, in this portion, are things that Yahuwah is telling Moshe. Okay, are you with me? This is part of the reason why there's a lot of, speculation about the timing involved here. Because this set of details comes in the middle of something. We know Moses is up on the mountain. The children of Israel are down below waiting and indeed getting impatient. He is told, tell the children of Israel, speak to the children of Israel, and say these things. But then a whole lot of other things that are said here maybe haven't yet been told to them as we're reading what Moshe is hearing, including the fact that he is being shown a pattern. He's being shown a blueprint. Here, too, I guess I'll pause and say there's some other interesting commentary. Moshe is being told, you're going to get this set of tablets. You're going to put those tablets in this ark that I'm describing at some length here. When's he going to get the tablets? Well, presumably close to the end, but he's up there for 40 days and 40 nights. So certainly one of the things that could be happening in the meanwhile is a lot of discussion. I don't know if you don't want to use that word, but a presentation, if you will, a vision of how all of this is going to come together. And what we're seeing here is just a description of it. And admittedly, you know what? I couldn't build it. That's part of the reason why I made the speculation about the, is it round? Is it rectangular? How does all this fit together? You can see, even with a really good description, it takes somebody who's got a picture in their head, a blueprint, to put this together. Going to have a veil around it of blue and purple, scarlet, fine twine linen with kruvim, the work of the skillful workman. Obviously, we're going to have to tell the skillful workman some of the specifics or he'll have to be guided by the Ruach. Hung upon four pillars of acacia overlaid with gold on four sockets of silver. So there's a, there's a place where we have a kind of a transition between metals as well. Gold boards, silver sockets. Hang the veil up under the clasp. Bring it together within the veil with the Ark of the Testimony. Sometimes it's called Ark of the Covenant, other times Ark of the Testimony. This veil now that we're talking about is going to be used to divide the holy place from the most holy place. The, Kadosh HaKadoshim, Holy of Holies. The Ark cover is going to be put upon the Ark in the Testimony, Ark of the Testimony, rather, in this most set apart, most holy place, BeKodesh Kodeshim. The veil is where the table is going to be set. Outside this veil, let me read it. You will set the table outside or without the veil, the candlestick over against the table on the south, on the side of the tabernacle toward the south, and put the table on the north side. Make a screen for the door of the tent out of blue, purple, fine linen, scarlet, the work of the weaver in colors, and make for the screen five pillars, also of acacia wood overlaid with gold, gold hooks, and five sockets of brass for them. The commentaries, again, here are kind of fascinating. And this is an observation I'll admit I hadn't noticed, because when it talks about where all this stuff is to be set, it's always with reference to the ark itself. Set the table outside the veil, towards the south, table on the north side. But we start again with the ark. The ark is the central part, and of course, even within the ark, what is central is, these are this is the place where the testimony, or the tablets, are to be set. It all starts there. Chapter 27 is going to tell us about the altar of acacia wood. It's bigger. It's 5 cubits by 5 cubits. So not quite 8 feet, 7.5 feet by 7.5 feet square. And it's 3 cubits high. So, 5.5 feet. 4.5 feet. I got to do the math. I'm having trouble with math tonight. It's going to have four horns on four corners of one piece, and it'll be overlaid this time with brass. It'll have pots to take away ashes. There'll be shovels, fire pans, flesh hooks, and all of these things will be made out of brass. There'll be a grating network also of brass and some rings, this time of brass in the four corners of that. There'll be a ledge around the altar, reaches halfway up, and it will also have staves, again made out of acacia wood. This time, the carrying staves for the altar, of course, because the altar's out of brass, they're going to be made out of brass too. They go in the rings, put on each side, each of the two sides, in order to bear it. It'll be hollow with planks, just like you have been shown. It says up in the mountain, this is how they're going to make it. Now, make the court. This will be outside their tabernacle. From the south side to the south, there'll be hangings. Fine twine linen, 100 cubits long for one side. This is big, and this is a place where a lot of people will be able to gather and see what's happening. Pillars, 20 of them, 20 sockets, this time of brass, and hooks of the pillars and fillets of silver. So we're working our way down again, and understand, we're seeing sockets that connect. So we go from brass to silver on in towards the Holy of Holies to gold. Northwise, north side, likewise, 100 cubits worth of hangings, 20 pillars, and again, sockets of brass and fillets of silver. On the west side, there'll be hangings. This time we're talking 50 cubits long, and of course, half as many pillars and sockets, 10 of each. More discussion of the outside and the hangings and how long they'll be. Hangings for one side out of the gate, 15 cubits, 3 pillars, and 3 sockets. And for the gate of the court, a screen as well, this time 20 cubits. Blue, purple, scarlet, fine twined linen, the work of the weavers, and 4 sockets and pillars. All of this around the court, filleted with silver, hooks of silver, sockets of brass. Length of the court, 100 cubits long and 50 wide by 5 cubits high. Everything, all of these instruments in the tabernacle, all of the service thereof, and the pins of the court are of brass. So we've worked our way down from the gold inside out, kind of backwards from normal, from gold to silver, and in some cases the metals literally make the transition as we move out. The building and the inner sanctum, the Holy of Holies, first, then the outer area, that's the holy separated by the curtain. Finally, then we move out to the court, and it is ringed with a lot of, these hangings, these curtains that set the whole place off. And with that, basically, that takes us to kind of the end of the story. I do want to make one more comment, I guess, before we quit. And of course, if there's questions, they can go up as well. I'm seeing the comments on the screen. Yeah, it's all of us, I think, have seen the pictures, and I've generally accepted the pictures. Again, I don't necessarily reject the idea of the rectangular Mishkan, the thing that we've seen many, many times. I just find that it's kind of fascinating because I like to do this elsewhere in Scripture to ask the question, wait a minute, what does it really say? And the closest we get to a rectangular indication, of course, is having to do with the court. And the fact that it, does give us the dimensions for the court. But once we get inside closer to the Holy of Holies, the very fact that we reference things with respect to the ark kind of tends to answer the question, well, why not say it's from one side or the other? Well, if it's round, there isn't a side. That might be part of the reason. So bottom line is I don't know. I've got one more thing I want to mention, and I'll point this out. Let me ask it as a question first, I guess. This is the way, since most of you have probably heard what I'm getting ready to say, it's a funny observation. There is more text, more verbiage, more words in the Torah that have to do with the creation of the Mishkan. This is only one of the places where we're going to see this discussion. We're going to get the discussion about how you're going to build it, and then we're going to get a discussion in a little bit later on of, yeah, they did build it, and it's going to be described in equal levels of detail. So how are you going to build it? And then we're going to build it. Okay. When you put it all together, there's more discussion about building the Mishkan, a place for the Creator, or at least His name, or His aspect, or His glory, the cloud, the pillar of fire, to come and to speak with people, a place for Him within the camp of men, In other words, His glory within His creation in a place inside of that created by man. There's more text on that than there is on the creation of the creation itself. Think about it, right? You got all of creation essentially taken two chapters in Bereshit. And He made a whole lot of stuff in there. But what's even perhaps more fascinating are the connections. And here you can go to some of the sages. I won't read all of this, but in one of the Midrashim called Rabbah, there's a complete discussion of the Mishkan and how it is in fact similar to the creation of the whole universe. First day, it says, He stretches out the heavens like a curtain. Well, that's actually from the Psalm 104. But when it comes to the Mishkan, there's also a reference to the curtain, right? Make a curtain of goat's hair over the tent, over the tabernacle. How about the second day? There'll be a firmament. Let it divide the waters from the waters. When it comes to the Mishkan, now we have a veil. It's going to divide for you between the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim, the Holy of Holies. So second day, we got the veil. Third day, let there be waters, and let these waters under the heavens be gathered together. When it comes to the Mishkan, it says, make a copper basin. Now, this is not from this week's Torah portion, but it's coming up. And the base thereof, copper for washing. So references to waters. Same thing goes for the fourth day, luminaries in the heavens. And, of course, we've already talked about how the Mishkan's going to have a place made out of pure gold for the menorah. Fifth day, let some birds, fowl, fly above the earth. And we, of course, have cherubim who are going to have their wings that will spread out upwards and so forth. And finally, we get to the point where man is discussed. And, of course, Aaron, your brother, is going to be brought in the sanctuary as well. And when it's all done, of course, we know it's going to happen. There's going to be some time for rest and even for commemoration of the work that's been done. So it is an interesting observation. There's a whole lot about the Mishkan, certainly that... Perhaps part of the reason why it's fascinating is because there is a lot of detail in here. And yet, when we step back and look at it, and even as I read it year after year, I'll admit, not having the picture, and it's impossible, at least I find it impossible, not to picture the artist's conceptions that I've seen when I read through it, right? So somehow or other, the idea that we have all of this detail, and yet, ultimately, we don't still quite have enough detail that makes it kind of interesting. And the more we realize that there are parallels, both with the creation and, of course, with the place where He dwells within us, the more interesting it is that, I hearken back to this idea of it is to the glory of God to hide a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter.